KBBS, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, and we are streaming at our website, BighornMountainRadio.com, where you can listen to us anywhere, anytime. Joining me now is Christina Schmidt, Public Information Specialist with Wyoming Game and Fish. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning.
We appreciate you taking the time today. We're going to talk about a few different things. Of course, right now it's hunting season, so you have some things to talk about, some reminders for hunters and that sort of thing.
Sure. One question we get a fair amount and have been seeing is, do people have to stop at a check station? So check stations are set up not just around here, but throughout the state in different places. They're along highways or heavily trafficked areas. In their signs, as you approach them, multiple signs, a lot of people ask, it says all hunters must stop, but people still ask, I don't have an animal, so do I have to stop? And the answer is yes. So we do require it. It is required that you still stop, because what we're doing at these check stations is getting a lot of data. So our biologists are, if you do have an animal, they're going to, you know, get it entered into a database of like what hunt area, the age of the animal, the gender of the animal, maybe some measurements that they would be taking of antlers, and maybe disease samples. So possibly, depending on your animal and your area where you harvested it, it could be like a chronic wasting disease sample. It could be a brucellosis sample. So it's just a really important way for our biologists to get their hands on a lot of animals and look at their condition, talk with hunters, see what their experience has been. Are you seeing a lot of animals, not seeing a lot of animals? It seemed last weekend talking to people, all the deer hunters said, I only saw elk, and all the elk hunters said, I only saw deer. So
you need to switch spots.
Yeah, so, you know, and it's just good to have conversations with hunters, answer questions. You know, it's just, yeah, definitely you do need to stop. If you don't have an animal, we'll try and get you right back on the road. But even not having an animal, again, that still gives us information like, hey, okay.
Where were you where you're not
where
seeing
were you,
anything?
Where you're not seeing things. So make sure you stop. Don't go driving past those things. If you don't have an animal, we still want you to stop and visit with us briefly, and we'll try and get you right back on the road. Okay. But those are important. Those are an important way for our biologists to get data and have good conversations with hunters.
And then hunters also need to know what their license allows them to shoot and what not to shoot.
Correct. We've had, some changes. You know, we remind people every year, look at the regulations. You know, even some regulations that have been the same for a long time, they can change. We do a season setting meeting in the spring every year, and there are potential changes every year. So make sure you look, double check your license type. You know, sometimes those limitations change. You know, sometimes maybe it used to be, certain dates, and maybe they are earlier or later. There might be, you know, an antler point restriction. There might be a limitation to, you know, private land only or you know, gender or something like that. So double check your license. Make sure you know what you have. Look at those regulations. See what the limitation is, if there is one on your license. And a big one is, yeah, gender, and retaining, you know, evidence of sex or age on the animal to make sure, you know, that you're in compliance with the license.
Yeah, you've got to be able to identify it once it's cut up, right?
Correct. Yeah. So, and it's pretty easy. You can save, you know, like on females, you can save the udders, you can save the head, you know, things like that. So, okay. A tail, you know, for mule deer versus white tail, whatever. Just something that, like you said, even if you've processed and pulled just the meat out, still retains something to show what you had.
And, of course, people also need to familiarize themselves with where they can drive and camp.
Yeah, lots of questions, of course, lots of questions about this. And some incorrect information out there about, you know, where you can drive. I know some people had thought that you could drive off-road to retrieve game in certain places. And you need to check with the land management agency where you're going to be, whether that's the Forest Service, if you're on, you know, a game and fish-owned property, if you're on BLM property. Check with that land management agency and find out what the rules are, what you can and can't do. For the most part, you know, in general, I think most places have, you know, motorized vehicles are restricted to actual roads, but check where you're going to be specifically and make sure you're following those rules. State land, we get a lot of questions about, can I camp on state land? That's not allowed. You're not allowed to camp on state land. So, again, check with where you're going, the land management agency, and make sure you're following all the rules so don't run into issues.
And then if hunters happen to see a violation from somebody else, what should they do?
This
and
happens.
What shouldn't they do?
Yeah, for sure. This happens every year. We really rely on hunters and other people who might be out recreating or landowners or whoever. You know, there's a lot of country out there. There's a lot of hunters out there. And our wardens are busy. They have a lot of places to be. And, you know, sometimes it happens that you see something that you suspect might be a violation. And if that's the case, we ask that you essentially be a good witness. Don't go have a confrontation or ask
you're
what they're
doing.
You're not a
cop. Don't pretend
you
are.
Yeah, don't, you know, that's not appropriate. But, you know, write down. Don't try to just remember, but actually write down what you see. You know, what time is it? Did you see a vehicle? What color was it? What license plate? You know, if you can get a license plate, that's ideal. Describe the people you saw, what you saw happen. You know, sometimes it's not actually a violation, and sometimes it is. And actually a lot of cases our wardens are able to make every year because someone saw something and called it in. So it is a huge help. It does make a difference. Like I said, even if you aren't quite sure, still, you know, take down the information, call and report it. The best way to report it is there's a 24-hour stop poaching hotline. That's 877-WGFD-TIP, T-I-P. And that goes to dispatch, and basically they'll take all your information and relay it to, you know, they're keeping track of who is where. They'll relay it to the closest person to that area. You can remain anonymous. A lot of times they will ask for your name just so law enforcement can ask, you know, get in touch with you, have a contact number, and ask you in more detail what you saw. But in general, you could stay anonymous if you choose to. But yeah, report it as soon as possible. That's the best thing, and get as much information as you can.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, all these people out here are going to have guns, the heated confrontation is not a good idea. Just report it to Game and Fish and let you guys handle it.
Right. You know, because again, like I said, what you saw may not actually be a violation, and then you're going to have, you know, potential
angry
conflict
people
with someone, you know. So just, you know, if you see something you think is not right or you know is not right, you know, take down the information, give a call.
And Christina, there's four carcass dumpsters available in the Sheridan region this year for a convenience for hunters to dispose of those carcasses.
Yes, this has expanded a little bit this year. I know it's a little bit outside of where the listeners are, but maybe if someone's traveling, wanted to give everyone the information. So I think a lot of folks are familiar. The Bureau of Land Management actually started 3 years ago with providing a carcass dumpster up at Mosher Gulch. Last year, that ran again, and they expanded out to Petrified Tree area, and Game and Fish put one between Dayton and Ranchester on Highway 14, and then we added another one this year over in Wright at the town maintenance shop. So there's actually four out this year in different locations. They're available 24 hours, and like you said, we're trying to make it really convenient for hunters to properly dispose of these carcasses. There are, for big game, there are transport and disposal rules in place that you have to follow, and this, of course, a lot ties back to chronic wasting disease. So these carcasses, basically, when you harvest an animal, legally you can, once you've removed all the edible portions of that animal from the field, you can leave the remaining carcass in the field because that's where the animal was naturally moving. If you remove that animal to take it home and process it, at that point, the carcass then needs to get into a landfill. What we don't want, you know, people have done it for a long time and I don't think realize what potential disease consequences are. We don't want you to take that carcass then and go put it on public land or out in a corner of your property
or
your neighbor's property or along the road or, you know, all of those things. Because the prions that cause chronic wasting disease, these proteins, actually can remain in the carcass, and you know, they're not your typical disease pathogen. They don't die when an animal dies. They remain intact and could potentially infect new animals that come and investigate that carcass, or, you know, it actually it contaminates the environment, the soil. So if you're moving an animal around that potentially has chronic wasting disease, you're potentially moving that disease around. So that's where these rules come into place. It's just one tool we have to try to help manage this disease and limit spread and prevalence. So these carcass dumpsters get emptied weekly into an approved landfill, so they're going where they need to go. It's just a convenient way for folks. If you take it home, process it, you can go. If the landfill's not open, you know, I know the Sheridan landfill, I believe, takes carcasses for free during the hunting season. You can take it up there at no cost. Buffalo, I think, has a very minimal charge. I mean, these are all very minimal costs, you know. But, you know, if those hours don't work for your schedule, you know, hey, it's a Sunday morning or whatever, those carcass dumpsters, we're trying to make those available and easy for folks to use.
And while convenient, the dumpsters are for carcasses, not for empty beer cans or any other trash.
Correct. Yeah, if you've been camping, don't bring all the rest of your stuff, please. You know, we're trying to, you know, we've got some great donors that have helped fund this. Of course, like I said, Bureau of Land Management. There's some game and fish dollars. The Mule Deer Foundation and Bow Hunters of Wyoming have all kicked in some money to provide these for folks. And, you know, I will say we've had really great compliance. We really have had people not putting inappropriate things in there. So it's a great thing. We really appreciate everyone's help with that. Yeah, it's not for residential trash or anything else. It really is just for these carcasses. And we appreciate everyone who's been really great about sticking to that, for sure.
Absolutely. And the last thing, well, maybe not the last thing, the second to last thing we're going to talk about today, avian influenza, otherwise known as the bird flu, has been found in the area.
Yeah, if folks remember this spring, nationally, and you know, certainly here in Wyoming, there were, you know, pretty widespread cases of avian influenza, and it tends to circulate somewhat regularly, but this was a particularly tough year. You know, definitely saw a lot of birds impacted over a pretty wide geographic area throughout the U.S., and it died down this summer. But now, you know, with migration going back south, seeing some more positives. So I want to make folks aware of that. We have had several in the past few weeks in the Buffalo, Gillette, Claremont, Sheridan area. So definitely in our area, we are seeing some positives. Basically, folks are reporting ill-looking or deceased birds that don't appear to have a reason, you know, they weren't necessarily sitting on the side of the road, like, oh, maybe it got hit by a car or obvious injuries. So people are reporting those, and we have had a handful of positives.
So is that how you tell they just look a little off? I didn't know if you had to, like, take their temperature. If they have a fever, then they have the flu?
They look off. So my understanding is they will show some neurological symptoms, maybe
they might even look drunk.
Yeah, that maybe balance is off. They're not walking right. They don't look healthy. You know, they look ill. So if you see that, definitely give us a call. If you come across any birds that, again, are just deceased and you no obvious sign of what happened, give us a call. Please don't pick it up, inspect it, check it out, anything like that. Just give us a call because we do have employees who have proper protective equipment to come pick them up. We will get them samples sent to the lab. Seeing a lot of raptors, so definitely if you see an owl or a hawk, maybe a sage grouse, anything like that, let us know. Songbirds, you know, some of the smaller birds, we're looking for folks to report if they're seeing groups, you know, four or five, six birds in an area that are deceased or looking ill, let us know right away. Just take a really good location, like a GPS location, or be able to describe really well where it is and give a call to the office. And we do have, you know, obviously some recommendations that we're following from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for hunters on handling birds. Obviously, if a bird looks ill or something like that, don't harvest and eat it. Don't handle it. Let us know. Always wear rubber gloves. This is just something we always suggest for folks anymore. If you're handling any wild game, wear gloves. Don't smoke or eat or anything like that where you would be taking your hands to your mouth or anything like that. Don't feed any ill animals to your pets. I have had a couple conversations with people who said, it didn't look right, so I'm just going to feed it to my dog. Well, don't do that either. You know, obviously that's a potential health hazard as well. So if anything doesn't look right, you know, take precautions. If it doesn't look ill, or excuse me, if it doesn't look healthy, if it looks ill or in any way, give us a call so we can take a look. But take precautions, you know, just be mindful of what you're doing when you harvest and field dressing an animal and thoroughly cook it. So if you, get a game bird of any sort, make sure you cook it up. I think the recommendation is 165 degrees Fahrenheit. So okay. just good, you know, hygienic practices.
And how does the bird flu spread between the animals?
You know, it sounds to me oral feces contact. So animals, you know, if they're congregating in certain places, they might get ill that way. I think maybe feeding on some other, you know, if they were feeding on an animal that died of the disease, they could potentially get it. So there's a lot of information actually about this disease on our website. In fact, we have a whole laboratory of folks who look at wildlife diseases out of Laramie, and they have put together a really nice website. You can go and take a look, not just about this disease, but all kinds of wildlife diseases. I find them fascinating, so I'm always on there looking, because they actually keep a pretty interesting interactive map for this avian influenza. We also had, I don't know if you remember, the rabbit hemorrhagic disease as well. Same thing, they had an interactive map of where they were finding positives, so people could get on there and look. So certainly if you're interested, you can go and look. It'll tell you, you know, hey, on this date, this species was found in this area and it tested positive for the disease. If you go to our website, there's a one of the tabs up there says Wildlife in Wyoming. You can click on that, and then some of your choices will be disease. And you can learn all about, of course, chronic wasting disease and all of that. But some of these others as well, avian influenza, tularemia, brucellosis, lots of different things if you have an interest in that. They do a really good job providing all kinds of information about the disease, how it's spread, how, you know, if it's something potentially transmissible to people or not, all those different things.
And then you've got the photo contest. It's the annual Wyoming Wildlife Magazine Photo Contest. It's open for entries. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this gets more popular every year. You know, everyone's out and has a phone, and phones take amazing pictures these days. And of course, then we have some really outstanding photographers who have, you know, fantastic true cameras and spend a lot of time out getting photos. So every year, the Wyoming Wildlife Magazine does a full issue devoted to photos taken in Wyoming. There's four different categories: wildlife, scenic, landscape, recreation, and then flora. So flowers, shrubs, trees, things like that. And folks are welcome to submit their photos. You can submit up to 10 across those four categories. Deadline is coming up midnight on November 14th. So if you have some you want to share and potentially get published in the magazine, definitely go online. You can submit them right through our website, and, you know, just ask a little information about when and where you took it and all of that. So it's pretty neat, and there are really, I believe the February issue is what is a full, I think it's February, a full issue of all these photos, and they are cool. Really, really some fantastic things that people catch with their phones.
That's
and cameras.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
Perfect area for it, too.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, you know, if you spend any time outdoors, almost all of us snap pictures here and there of something really cool we saw. So this is just a great way that if you want to, you'd be able to share it.
And Christina, one more thing before I let you go here this morning, because I think the next time I talk to you, we'll already be into pheasant season. We were talking before we went on the air that there's a new rule for pheasant season this year.
Yeah, so it will be any pheasant. So in the past, it's been roosters, right? So again, back to read the regulations, because things change. This is a change. So I encourage folks to, for sure, take a look at the regulations, read through there, because, you know, this is a change and you know, it's kind of a big one from what folks are used to. And, you know, along that line, too, in November, and we'll talk about it more in November, but we will have the Bud Love Youth Pheasant Hunt coming up,
oh, very
too.
Cool.
That's always fun. It is fun, and I think we're on year 7 or 8,
Great way to get the kids out there.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that more in November, but, you know, just be mindful that that is coming up along with Fort Phil Kearny, where they have a family pheasant hunt where everyone can come out, and that's a really great deal too. So
Cool. We'll
talk about those opportunities coming up, but certainly want to encourage folks, check out the regulations. That's a big change this year. And a reminder, we don't have as many hard copies printed this year. So for those who do have the capability to, you know, either print them at home, you know, the ones you want. We even have it broken down by, like, you know, deer or elk, so you don't have to print the whole packet, or game birds or whatever. You can print from home or download to your phone or something like that. If you have those capabilities, that's the best option. If you don't, we do have copies at the office. We will make sure that you get a hard copy for those who need one.
Okay. Talking with Christina Schmidt, Public Information Specialist with Wyoming Game and Fish. Christina, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. And everybody keep those radio dials tuned right here, KBBS.